Our final case for this morning is U.S. versus McCoy. Sorry, I called Mr. Donovan by your name, but I didn't mean to do that. You are Mr. Schultz. Yes.
May it please the Court, counsel for the government, Todd Schultz, Assistant Federal Public Defender representing the defendant appellant. The 327-month sentence imposed by the district court in this case is both procedurally and substantively unreasonable. The district court began the sentencing hearing by properly calculating the guideline range, and the 327-month sentence it imposed is within that range. The Supreme Court has ruled that courts of appeals may, not that they must, but that they may apply a presumption of reasonableness to within-guideline sentences, and this court has chosen to do so. This does not mean, however, that a within-guideline sentence will always be reasonable. The presumption is rebuttable. I am unaware, however, of a single case in this circuit where the court has found a within-guideline sentence to be substantively unreasonable. In this case, the presumption is rebutted. The presumption is based, as the court knows, on the rationale that because the guidelines are the product of empirical study and national experience, they provide a rough approximation of a sentence that would achieve the goals of the sentencing statute 18 U.S.C. 3553A. However, it's well established that the child pornography guidelines are not the product of national experience or empirical study, but rather the product of specific congressional directives and mandatory minimums. Therefore, the justification for the presumption certainly doesn't exist in this case, and I would note that the
Could I just ask you, is there anything that you can point us to in this record to suggest that Chief Judge Herndon would have been inclined to impose a lower sentence? I mean, you're agreeing that at least as far as the guidelines go, the range was properly calculated. And you would also agree that we're underneath whatever, because there isn't a statutory maximum here, right?
Not on the enticement, Your Honor. There are obviously statutory maximums on the other four counts.
Right, but for the enticement, no. So what would you point to in this record to indicate that if he had been absolutely free of the guideline, Judge Herndon might have imposed a lower sentence?
Well, Your Honor, it's clear that I think the court understood that the guidelines were simply instructive, not that it was required to follow them. They obviously understand the advisory nature. But the argument here is that the district court, in assessing the 3553A factors, based its conclusions on speculation. And so it's clear the court wasn't inclined to go lower, but we're suggesting that a reasoned analysis of the 3553A3 factors.
Right, I know. It's kind of a tongue twister. But one of the factors is protection of the community, you know, deterrence and the like. And the judge, all judges can ever do when they think of that factor is to extrapolate from what has happened in the past. And this judge thought that Mr. McCoy did pose a very serious risk to the community. I wouldn't necessarily call that speculation.
Well, Your Honor, it's not just that he suggested that he would pose a serious risk to the community. He found that he was an outrageously dangerous person, not because he believed he would commit a contact offense. The court went so far as to say there was no evidence that the defendant ever touched a child or ever would touch a child.
But he did think that the verbal, if you will, if I can call it that, through the Internet, whether written or otherwise, activities were themselves extremely damaging to young people.
Well, Your Honor, I believe the court went beyond that and engaged in speculation, because the court didn't just say that it would be troubling or that maybe the child would be confused or be embarrassed and need some type of counseling. In evaluating the harm, the court said that it was concerned that these online conversations would transform these children into child murderers or child molesters, and that's why it found the need to protect the public as one of the two most significant factors in this case. And I would, as this court knows, the district court is obligated to impose a sentence based on information with an indicia of reliability. And it is the defendant's position that the district court's conjecture that these online conversations would create child molesters.
The sentencing court is allowed to draw reasonable inferences about the impact of the crime on victims and the community. It doesn't have to empirically substantiate that or have evidence in the classic sense in the record to support that kind of inferential reasoning. That's very common in sentencing. There's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. And so this argument about speculation is really flimsy as far as I'm concerned, especially in a case like this where, you know, the judge is entitled to rely on his common sense about the impact of this kind of deviant behavior on children.
Your Honor, while I respect the fact that the court may disagree with the defendant's assessment, we don't believe that it is a reasonable inference to assume.
Well, you'd prefer to substitute scientific research for common sense, right?
Well, Your Honor,
that's been a continuing theme in criticizing the child pornography guidelines and so on.
I don't believe that the court need go that far. I believe common sense suggests that all individuals in our society, whether adults or children, are constantly exposed to stories involving violence or depravity, that it's virtually inescapable.
Not like this.
Well, Your Honor.
Not children of the age that your client was targeting.
Your Honor.
This is really outrageous stuff.
Your Honor, and I don't disagree with that, but that doesn't mean that a reasonable inference is that these children will be transformed.
Took it in stride and weren't harmed by it? I mean, I find your argument offensive, frankly.
Your Honor, it's not my intention to be offensive, and what I would suggest to the court is we're not suggesting that they weren't harmed. What we are suggesting is that it is not a reasonable inference to infer that they would become child molesters and child murderers, and that the court's speculation on that particular point amounts to significant procedural error. I think a reasonable inference in assessing the seriousness of this offense would be that the defendant's words would cause much less harm than an actual contact offense. And it is, I believe, significant in evaluating the seriousness of the offense, the district court's conclusion that this individual was not likely, that there was no evidence that he had in the past engaged or would engage in a contact offense. We also believe that the district court placed too much weight on the need to deter the defendant in imposing the 327-month high-end sentence. The court indicated, or can be inferred, that the court thought that the defendant would be highly resistant to deterrence. I believe a examination of the 3553A factors suggests otherwise. Again, it is a significant fact that no evidence he ever touched or would touch a child. That he
the
had
court thought that psychological harm is significant, and it's hard to disagree with that, actually. So, yes, I mean, touching can be terrible as well, but psychological harm is real.
I agree with that, Your Honor, but I think that to say that that's akin to a contact offense underestimates the seriousness of a contact offense, because with a contact offense, you also have the psychological component and the physical component. And these are conversations that aren't occurring over the phone. They aren't occurring in person. These are online conversations.
No, we understand that. I mean, the district court weighed very heavily the severity of the psychological harm that could be done and recognized that there would be a range of reactions. Some people maybe wouldn't react as badly. Other people might be very vulnerable. But if you want to save any rebuttal time, you may do so.
I would like to, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Ms. Scott.
Thank you, Your Honor. Excuse me. I represent the United States of America in the case of Christopher McCoy. One thing, Your Honors, that I would like to point out right away is that what the court said was the court did not say that we do not have absolutely no evidence that McCoy ever touched his child. What he said on page 38 of the sentencing transcript is that we need not, he's talking about Mr. Schultz's argument about the fantasy, and he says, we need not be worried about Mr. McCoy because one thing that is relatively certain, according to Mr. Schultz, is that we have absolutely no evidence that Mr. McCoy ever touched a child or would ever touch a child anywhere near the kind of ways in which he described in those unbelievably horrendous chats. Your Honor, as the government set forth in its brief, there was indication that he discussed meeting children. He discussed even with the undercover officer, who he believed to be a 14-year-old boy, visiting him in New Hampshire. none of those issues were addressed by the defendant in his brief. He asked, he spoke with several underage children on Facebook, a regular social networking site, about possibly visiting them. I think there was one conversation with an 11-year-old where he said, I'd like to come to, I believe it was New Hampshire, and spoil you. There were conversations where he asked for pictures. I think with the enticement count, which appears to me that the defendant is arguing that the court overstepped its bounds in respect to that count in particular.
Well, that's the one that drives the right. length of the sentence, so I'm sure that's the reason for the focus.
Well, one of the things that that he doesn't address is the government's arguments that, look, this was not just, you know, an innocuous chat. He sent him child pornography, specifically child pornography of young minor males performing oral sex on adult children. He talked to him about masturbating. He talked to him about, hey, do this and you can stretch your anus out in preparation for anal sex. He discussed with this undercover officer getting his brother, his 12-year-old brother, involved in having sexual intercourse with him.
Well, and in fact, an enticement charge, the crime of enticement, presupposes the illicit conduct that would follow. And so this is not simply a possession of child pornography case. This is an enticement case. And so the emphasis that's placed on the lack of hands-on or contact pedophilia is a red herring as far as I'm concerned. We have a pedophile here, and we need to look beneath the surface of the child pornography charges alone to what was really going on here. And he was... at the very least, enticing children over the Internet, and whether there had been any contact violations before is unknown, but certainly there would be some in the future, and that's what the concern of the district court judge was here,
correct.
As
I mean,
is amply borne out by the charged conduct in this case alone.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize. And I believe that's one of the things that... I wanted to point out is, you know, Mr.
McCoy, we don't know specifically whether he, what his capability of translating talk into action was.
Correct. However, he never.
That's, you can call that speculation or reason conclusions or whatever you want.
He didn't stop on his own. He stopped because he was caught. And he admitted to the undercover officers, yeah, I had talked about meeting this guy in New Hampshire. Oh, but gee, you know, I thought maybe it was another fat guy like me. You know, he tries to excuse his behavior. He tries to minimize his behavior. He doesn't talk about, he admits that he sent this kid, who he believed to be a kid, a camera so he can send him sexually explicit pictures. He even described what he wanted in those pictures. And he sent him a phone. So it wasn't like he was satisfied with just text messaging this kid. He wanted to talk to this kid. I think some of the other things that were not addressed by the defendant that the district court considered as a whole, I mean, the district court was in a better position to determine the appropriate sentence under 3553A factors because it heard all of the evidence of sentencing, it read the chats, it had the benefit of the PSR. Not that this court doesn't, of course, but as the Gall court noted, that just simply because this court might find a different, might think that it should be a different sentence, is not sufficient to find an abuse of discretion necessarily. He didn't discuss the fact that he chatted with a 14-year-old girl about being turned on by changing a baby's diaper. He chatted with an adult female saying, hey, let me share your little girl with me. You know, I'd like for her, whatever. And
no, you know, even the briefs set out enough of his conversations, I think, to give a good picture of what was going on.
And I think another thing that we need to, I wanted to point out to the court was that, you know, the defendant makes much of the fantasy aspect of this, but the court did consider that. The court did consider Mr. Schultz's argument, you know, that what we have to look at the fantasy versus the fact. And he even acknowledged that it was a brilliant argument, but he believed that some of that, his reasoning that because there was no daughters, that we should disregard these other conversations was not something that he could do. based on his analysis of the factors. I think that one of the things that the district court said, and I think what shows that he specifically looked, that he did not impose a sentence that was sufficient but not greater than necessary, based on his comments about, you know, this is the worst case I've seen on the federal bench, or I've seen nothing like this before on the federal bench. You know, this, he's the largest filth or consumer of this filth I've ever seen. The judge did not depart upward, which he very well could have done. Instead, he found that the guideline range was sufficient in this case to punish Mr. McCoy for his egregious behavior. And I think and, of course, as the court commented on those, the chats with the 14-year-old about the, you know, what he would do with children, these, I think the court was looking at, the court was making a reasonable inference, looking at the cumulative effect of Mr. McCoy's chats with, as he said, you know, they listen to Mr. McCoy, they listen to this other guy, and this other guy, and then all of a sudden, you know, when they're in this formative age, they start thinking, hey, is this, you know, maybe this is normal. You know, I'm seeing it on TV. I'm seeing it. I'm hearing it from this guy. I don't believe the judge made any speculation or conjecture at all. Mr. McCoy specifically admitted that he was a pedophile and a child molester when he was talking to the 13-year-old girl. He says, now me, on the other hand, at 48.
Counsel, we know the facts.
Okay. Okay. Well, if there's anything else the court would like me to specifically address, I will rest on.
I think that would be fine to rest on your brief. Okay.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Anything further, Mr. Schultz?
Yes, sir.
I believe the court noted that
before
it was.
Before you proceed, I'd just like to ask you this, Mr. Schultz. There is a parallel between your complaint about not having national or empirical guidelines and your complaint about speculation and so on. Is there not?
Your Honor, I guess there certainly is. I believe there's some overlap. The argument about the presumption.
Well, that's not overlap. I mean, they're saying the same thing, essentially.
Well, I think the argument about speculation goes more to procedural error, and the argument about the presumption and lack of empirical evidence goes more to the substantive unreasonableness of the sentence. Just with respect to the government's argument, I believe the court mentioned that it was the enticement offense which was driving the sentence in this case. I do think it is worth noting, though, that under the guidelines deemed the enticement offense to be less serious and had a lower guideline range when that was calculated than the pornography, than the possession of child pornography and other counts that grouped in this case. The defendant asked for a 20-year sentence on the enticement count. That's twice the statutory mandatory minimum. So the defendant certainly didn't think that this wasn't a serious offense. But I think the court should keep in mind that Congress said there was a case of enticement that was worth 10 years. And we're suggesting that a case like this that involves words, just words, the most offensive words imaginable, but not any in-person contact, no effort to engage in sexual conduct with this particular individual, and this level of fantasy is on the spectrum of these offenses, and it is a wide spectrum, is closer to 20 years. And the fact, the court did not, in my reading of the sentencing transcript, sentence the defendant to 327 months because it feared that he would commit future contact crimes. In fact, I think the court's statements at sentencing make it clear that the court did not believe he posed a danger of committing future contact offenses, but rather that others would carry them out for him. And we believe that that is speculation and is significant procedural error.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement, and the court will be in recess.